So this is my lecture on science and religion, ways of viewing the debate. Currently in the United States, there are two paradigms that are really competing for explaining the universe and our place in it. First of all, we have what I would call the religious viewpoint, and it's predominantly in the United States a Judeo-Christian view, and just because of the demographics of our country. And that's what I'm going to talk about in this talk, because that's what I know best. And we don't have the time to deal with all the religious viewpoints, because this is really an AP bio course and we're just taking a weak diversion into evolutionary controversies. The other paradigm, of course, is the scientific paradigm. So we're going to take a look at these two different paradigms. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you three perspectives. I'm going to try to make order out of the chaos of this debate. And I'm going to sort of come up with a classification system that divides this debate into three different approaches. And I'm going to call the first approach the conflict approach, the second one the independence approach, and the third one the dialogue integration approach. And I want to warn you all, if you go out and try to find, let's say, truth in this whole area of the science versus religion debate, you're not always going to find it in the media. I'm not saying that you can't find it, but let's face it, the media is not always your friend, because you got to think about what's the media's agenda. The media's agenda, of course, is to make money. How do you make money? Well, you promote controversy, because by promoting controversy, you get more people to buy your magazines or newspapers or watch your TV shows or whatever. And, it's a capitalist society. We make more money doing this. And so I'm going to try to at least give you a way to sort of think about these things and realize that if throughout your life, if you come back and visit these ideas, be careful when you read the media, because they're not always portraying things in a dispassionate way that's trying to really seek understanding. Sometimes they just want to sell you something. And I'll just tell you a story. Last week, I was at a lecture. De Anza, the Flinton Center, they've had this celebrity forum for 40 years now, where they bring in famous speakers, and they, I think there's about 8 of them a year. And last week, they had sort of a dialogue between Newt Gingrich on the right and Robert Reich on the left. And it was really interesting. And, of course, Newt Gingrich was the Speaker of the House during the Clinton administration, and Robert Reich was the Secretary of Labor during the Clinton administration. And it was interesting because Robert Reich actually mentioned in his talk, his part of the talk, that he was on television that day trying to, he was discussing this whole financial meltdown that's been going on with someone from the right. And I guess, when they're on TV, whenever you're on TV and they always have something in their ear, the producer can speak to them. And he said, there he was trying to, in a very dispassionate way, describe sort of his perspective on this financial meltdown and what should be done. And I guess it was going very well. He was, kind of back and forth between someone from the right, he's on the left, and the producer in his ear basically says, get angry, get angry, which, was the whole idea that you want to promote this sort of drama on TV so you can get more people to tune in. So that just shows you. I mean, he was appalled by it, actually. He said, I was appalled by this because this is what the media tries to do. So, I just bring that as an example. So let's begin with the first way to sort of frame these arguments. The conflict model. In this one, individuals in this category believe that a person cannot believe in both evolution. And when I talk about evolution, I'm talking about macroevolution, origin of species, and God. And there's, of course, one view is what we call scientific materialism. And people in this view consider the fundamental, individuals in this group consider the fundamental reality of the universe to simply be matter. That's it. There's nothing else. There's no spiritual realm at all. They believe that natural laws acting on matter explain everything. They basically think that the universe is ultimately mindless and purposeless. And in fact, the only meaning that the universe has is meaning that we give to it ourselves. You know, this is sort of the existentialist dilemma, you know, that man has to make his own meaning, humans. And therefore, that the only way to really have any reliable knowledge, is using the scientific method. And it's always interesting to see what kind of individuals represent this group. Richard Dawkins is probably the most famous. He's a biologist. He's written a number of books like The Blind Watchmaker, The Selfish Gene. And more recently, he has written a book called The God Delusion. And so he really takes his scientific materialism he's gone into the whole area of sort of theology, I suppose, and this whole debate. And he, I would say, is very vehement in his views and feels that because, in his view, science explains everything, that religion has no place in our world at all. And he says it's delusional. Anyone that's religious is completely delusional. So he is out at the extreme there. E.O. Wilson is in this same group, but he has a much different view of how he expresses his ideas. And he wrote a book a few years ago called The Creation, which says similar ideas to Dawkins, but in a much different manner than Dawkins. And so he has a much gentler manner. And so they're very different approaches, but they sort of are in the same camp. Daniel Dennett is a philosopher at Tufts University. He wrote a book called Darwin's Dangerous Idea. And then finally, Francis Crick, very famous. He discovered the double helix structure of DNA. He passed away several years ago, but he wrote a book called The Astonishing Hypothesis. And they would all be considered scientific materialists. Now, on the other side, we get the what are called biblical literalists. And these are people who believe the Bible is literally true, that the universe is very young, about 6,000 years old, and that they believe that there is more to the universe than just natural laws acting on matter. They believe that there's a spiritual realm with a God who gives meaning to the universe. And individuals in this group are fundamentalist Christians, Jews, Muslims. And interesting, you've got a group of people called creation scientists. And if you want to know more about their views, you can go to what's called the Institute for Creation Research, and I put their website here. And this group has been around for decades now, and they think that they can scientifically prove that the Earth is 6,000 years old. So, you know, this is a viewpoint, and it's, you know, in this conflict mode, they're on the sort of the biblical literalist side. Now, there's another group within the conflict area. I call them the new critics, and they're still in the conflict mode, and they're on the sort of the more religious part of it, but they see the theory of evolution is wrong, but they critique it from a slightly different perspective. And I'm going to tell you about two individuals simply because they're so well known in this arena. They've gotten a lot of press over the last decade or two. One of them is Philip Johnson. He's written a number of famous books in this area. Probably the most famous is Darwin on Trial. He's a lawyer, and he's raised criticisms of scientific materialism because he says scientific materialists promote atheistic philosophies as if they were part of science. He simply attacks evolutionary theory as if it were inherently atheistic. So it's kind of an interesting perspective. Another individual who's come along in the last decade is Michael Behe. He's a professor of biochemistry at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, and he wrote a book about 10 years ago called Darwin's Black Box. And in this book, he made a significant splash because he came up with this idea of what's called irreducible complexity. And what he means by this is that he believes that biochemical systems, because they're so complicated, couldn't evolve to their very sophisticated level because any step along the way wouldn't be advantageous to the organism. So you either have everything together working the way it is now, or any piece along the way wouldn't really function. So what his great example he gives is a really simple analogy. He uses the idea of a mousetrap, and he says, think about a mousetrap. A mousetrap has all these parts, and when it's all put together, it can catch mice quite easily. But if you take any piece away and sort of try to have it function, it has no function. So how could you have a mousetrap evolve, you know, all these individual pieces kind of slowly being added to the mousetrap when there's no function to the mousetrap until the final product? That's the idea of irreducible complexity. You would say the mousetrap is irreducibly complex, just like biochemical systems. And so he says, he assumes life must have originated through a predetermined divine plan of what has been termed intelligent design, rather than, you know, a dynamic, open-ended process in which there's interaction with the changing environment, you know, that plays a critical role, you know, in your typical evolutionary theory. So this is the whole intelligent design movement, which has received quite a bit of, you know, press over the last, you know, I'd say 5 or 6 years in particular, because there was a big case trial back in Pennsylvania several years ago that dealt with this whole intelligent design. You can read about it on the internet if you'd like. Okay, the next model of how to do this is what we call the independence model. And in the independence model, you've got people who believe that in the science-religion debates, they need to avoid conflict, and they simply do this because they're in separate compartments, that science and religion have their own jurisdictions, and they shouldn't meddle in each other's affairs. They believe science and religion ask different questions, how versus why questions. They study different domains. One studies the objective world. The other studies the spiritual moral world. And finally, they employ completely different methods. That one is science, you know, science is based on human observations and reason. Religion is based on divine revelation. So they're just completely independent. And from a religious perspective, what you get is you get Jews and Muslims and Christians who give a central, scripture, let's say, a central religious role, but they don't insist upon what we call biblical literalism or defending this thing I talked about earlier called creation scientists. You would say they take the Bible seriously, but not literally. And they think of God as a primary cause who works through the secondary causes of the natural world that science studies. And, you know, like I have a quote here, God acts through laws of nature, using them as his instruments for achieving intended goals. So that would be kind of maybe a summary of the religious perspective. Now, on the scientific perspective, we get the most famous individual who advocates this idea, Stephen Jay Gould. And he actually considered himself an agnostic, and he articulated a principle called non-overlapping magisteria, or noma. And in noma, he really came up with the idea of a magisterium is a domain of teaching authority. And he said, you know, each domain has its own jurisdiction because it has its own questions, rules, criteria of judgment. So, science. The magisterium of science covers the empirical realm. What's the universe made of? That'd be, you know, facts. Why does it work this way? Theory. The magisterium of religion extends over questions of ultimate meaning, moral value. They're totally separate realms. They shouldn't, you know, talk to one another. And so Stephen Jay Gould wasn't an atheist. He was an agnostic. Okay? What about the final way to sort of integrate this? In this particular view, we call it the dialogue integration model. And individuals in this category are sort of seeking to find a middle way that sort of reconciles both science and religion. They don't see science and religion as an either-or way of viewing the universe. They actually believe that a dialogue between the two ways of the universe can really help them come to a deeper understanding of the universe. Now, there's many ways that this is being done right now. I'm not going to go through all of them. I'm just going to kind of give you some resources, tell you a few things, and then if this is something that interests you, you can kind of follow it up on your own. First of all, let's talk about the Catholic Church, because I find this very, very interesting, and so do some of my students. The Catholic Church has been deeply involved in this. They're in this category. They got burned by Galileo 400 years ago, and they don't want to go there again. So Pope John Paul II, who was the pope for several decades, sponsored a number of conferences at the Vatican where he would bring world-famous scientists and theologians together in an attempt to find common ground between science and the Christian faith. And in fact, in the mid-90s, in 1996, he published an important statement on evolution and its relationship to the nature of man. And if this interests you, I highly recommend you go read this, because it's only about two or three pages long. And basically, the Catholic Church, their view on this whole controversy is that evolution occurred, but that man was distinctly different, and that they believe that God infused man with this idea of a soul, and so that man is different, but that evolution pretty much rolled out the way most scientists explain it in most evolutionary textbooks. It's very interesting. That surprises a lot of people. A lot of people don't realize that. Okay, there's a group up in Berkeley called the Center for Theology and Natural Sciences, and they do serious academic work in this field. And they have a website, and you can go to their website and read about what kind of stuff they do. There's a organization called Counterbalance, and it's a nonprofit. It was underwritten by one of the original people who developed Microsoft Word and made a ton of money. And they've got a website, lots of interesting stuff on that if you find this area of interest. There's an organization called the John Templeton Foundation, and their goal is to sort of encourage a fresh appreciation, for people for all people and cultures, of the moral and spiritual dimensions of life. And there's this really famous investor. His name is Sir John Templeton. He just passed away this last year. I think he was in his 90s. And he made, billions of dollars. And he spent a lot of his money during his life, and particularly the last maybe 15, 20 years, in trying to bring together scientists, religious thinkers, and try to make, some sense of all this. And they've got a website. There's a book called When Science Meets Religion, and in my opinion, it's the best book on the subject. In fact, most of this lecture is based on the book, and I took some stuff straight out of the book, so I'm making a disclaimer right now from this lecture, although I've changed it around to sort of my perspective. It's available in our school library, and I highly recommend that you take a look at it if you're just interested in this subject. Barber won the Templeton Prize in Religion in 1999, and this prize, interesting, a lot of people don't know about this. This prize, the award for this prize, the monetary award, is always set to be higher than the Nobel Prize. So whatever the Nobel Prize is, the Templeton Prize in Religion is always higher. And it's currently it's over $1 million. I think it's probably around $1.5 or $1.6 million right now. And it's awarded to one individual every year. And so this guy, Ian Barber, who wrote this book, When Science Meets Religion, actually won this award back in 1999. So it's pretty interesting.